Hello, listeners. A very warm welcome to our Big Unlock podcast, Season 7. And today, we're very excited to have Weston Blakeslee and Dr. Ben Long with us. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'll be your host today for the podcast. So today's episode brings together two leaders who are tackling healthcare transformation from complementary angles, clinical care and digital innovation. Dr. Ben Long is on the front lines at Magnolia Regional Health Center, delivering care while navigating the realities of modern clinical workflows. And Weston Blakeslee from Dr. First is rethinking how medication management and patient engagement can be streamlined through smarter technology. And today's episode should be really interesting because together they're going to offer us a grounded and forward-looking perspective on what it really takes to move from all these fragmented digital tools to truly connected patient-centered care. And with that introduction, I'll hand it over to them for a short intro and then we can get started. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We're very excited to talk about digital health transformation and improving clinical care. You know, as you mentioned, my name is Ben Long. I'm a hospitalist, so internal medicine by training. I serve as the Associate Chief Medical Officer at Magnolia Regional Health Center, and I'm really motivated by innovations in care and quality improvement and patient safety. And that led me to partner with my good friend, Wes here. So Wes, want to tell them who you are?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And it's a pleasure to be here. And thank you for organizing and for all the listeners. Really, really hope you can get some positive anecdotes and stories out of what we're able to share today. Wes Blakeslee, I'm our VP Commercial Enablement at Dr. First. I'm a pharmacologist by training. I spent my first 5 years of my career developing heart failure therapeutics. So this particular population was near and dear to my passion for medication management. And thankfully, we were able to partner with Dr. Long and his team to get some really positive outcomes from digital interventions in this particular population. I've been with Dr. First for about 5.5 years, and my team partners with all of our clients to make sure that any sort of digital interventions that we launch are actually achieving the proper clinical outcomes, which is part of the peer-reviewed study that Dr. Long and I collaborated on and published in January of this year in PLOS Digital Health.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast once again. And I'm glad you mentioned that study because we were really excited to, you know, read that study and understand more about what you guys were doing with that. So let's get started with that. You know, Dr. Long, from the frontline at Magnolia Regional, take us back to the point when you realized that, you know, this heart failure readmissions was not just a discharge planning problem, but actually a medication follow-through problem. And what surprised you enough to change the care model? And tell us a little bit more about how you kind of, you know, started with this and where it took you.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think that before diving into any data, it's really important to understand the setting. And Magnolia Regional Health Center is it's a 200-bed acute care hospital that's in rural Northeast Mississippi. So this is a medically underserved population, high disease prevalence, particularly cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. And our patients face all kinds of significant barriers that, you know, influence their outcomes, socioeconomic, including transportation and cost issues, limited access to specialty care, et cetera. And the context really matters when we think about medication adherence. So we know that medications improve outcomes. You know, we see this, borne out in the literature, but less attention has been given to how do we help people not just comply, but become engaged in their care. And for issues like congestive heart failure management, that's really key because all of these advances in medicine are helping people live longer. But it's important to remember that they're not living longer free from disease. So as a system, we have to adapt to being better chronic care managers, essentially. So it's population management. And one more note on just the difficulty of heart failure in particular, that non-adherence is a real issue for both patients and providers. It has a meaningful impact on their outcomes and on the overall cost to our healthcare system. So I think, you know, Wes and I reference often that about 1 in 5 new prescriptions are never filled. That's what we, you know, identified as prescription abandonment. And half of those refills are eventually abandoned. So we saw this, and particularly Dr. First has been instrumental in helping us gain that perspective into what is happening with patients and their medications through time. And we wanted to try to improve that. That was a starting point for us.
Great. That's a really good introduction to this problem and your study. But tell us more about, because you're saying the population is, you know, very underserved. It's like older people, older patients who don't even like fulfill these prescriptions. Then how did you find that, you know, the text reminders by themselves were not enough? And then how did you get this idea of doing the nurse navigators and actually handing off to humans? How did that whole, you know, I would love to hear like a story or an anecdote if you have something there.
Yeah, to me, it was really familiarizing with our population. Mm-hmm. And so this took a lot of intentional understanding of what are the individual problems through time, you know, that we encounter that could be attributed to, you know, as a root cause rather of these patients' outcomes. So it took time, it took experience, it took familiarity with these individuals. I think that too often we're tempted to make a sweeping generalization for a population, and we try to generalize a solution for that population. And then what happens is, you know, a change just winds up being a change and not an improvement. So it's one part implementation science, as we know, quality improvement often is, as is care innovation. And then it's one part really knowing the population that you're serving. And so some of those characteristics that you mentioned is, yes, we have an older, mainly Medicare-based population, rural population that faces a lot of the socioeconomic barriers that I mentioned before, understanding their patterns of how they access care and where our care planning along the continuum falls through. And so one of the things that Dr. First really emphasizes is we try to eliminate care silos. And for me, working in the hospital, that resonated with me so well because that is how I feel our system functions in this area. And I suspect that throughout most of the country, where we have this episodic care that is largely designed to be very good at being reactive. You know, when the patient has an acute need, you know, we stand ready to meet that. I've heard this described before as, you know, the U.S. healthcare system is, you know, we allow people to travel towards a cliff and, you know, we even allow them to fall off that cliff, but we have got a really expensive, great ambulance waiting for them at the bottom. And that may be that's obviously an incomplete and maybe even unfair characterization. But the point is that somehow we have to adapt to being more proactive in meeting patients' needs, especially as we drive down mortality rates, hopefully with improvements in therapeutics. But we have to then shift to how do we manage the morbidity associated with these more chronic diseases? I mean, we've seen similar patterns happen in the oncology field over time. It's cancer has largely become more of a chronic disease. Well, that's changed dramatically how we approach those patients and their care. So I think of this in a lot of the same ways, thinking how do we engage with the patients in a way that is more proactive? How do we help them with education and eliminating barriers? I think that we're looking for solutions that are widely accessible, that are lower cost and far reaching, and that equals higher value in a sense. So that's what we tried to do and how we tried to begin thinking about this population and what better looks like for them.
Thank you, Dr. Long. That was, you know, a comprehensive answer. And my next question is going to be for Wes. So Wes, Dr. First sits at the intersection of, you know, prescribing, adherence and patient engagement. So what are some of the friction points you have seen in this medication journey that you've solved so far, and which are some which you, you know, still think are not solved, but with AI, maybe you think, you know, you're going to get there soon?
Yeah. So our goal is to always build solutions that will help providers and patients, like Dr. Long, using our technology in order to help provide better patient care, but also be an extension of his care to his patients. So we've had a long, long strategy of making sure that we have a solution that can intersect and help every single step of the prescription journey, from that initial prescribing decision to real-time prescription benefit, costs of a medication, prior authorization avoidance, making sure that patients don't simply just forget their medications. We give them education on why it's important and also give them a function that will essentially nudge them to fill their medications. And really, that was the genesis of why we started this study. Dr. Long and I have been collaborating for about 5 years on many different initiatives. This was just the most recent one that we published in January. And to his point too, we need to be intentional about the type of technology that we build. It can't be an added step in the already cumbersome system that our providers and patients have to deal with. So we need to make sure that we're very intentional about every sort of new technological innovation that we want to bring to the table. You mentioned AI, and that is the hottest topic in all of healthcare tech right now, right? We've employed certain versions of AI for a very long time, but that's in the case of machine learning. It's not generative AI that we had previously been exploring up until very recently. The machine learning aspects of this go through a very extensive quality control analysis, and they're very niche in what data they're trained on. So we can be way more accurate for any sort of high throughput recommendations that we would put into our technological stack. Generative AI is still a very nascent field. It does have hallucinations. I'm sure you see that on some of these tools because they're pulling from such a wide data set. It's not saying they're not useful, but in the context of patient care, there must be a very intense quality control aspect to the generative AI solutions that would make sure that the data that you're seeing and the recommendations that are being surfaced are actually clinically accurate. So that is one of the next steps on what we're exploring from a technology company. And having partners like Dr. Long and his team at Magnolia, who have been big partners of ours for a very long time, this gives us the opportunity to not only, you know, refine the technology that we build, but help them with their real world problems at the same time.
Yeah. Great. Rohit, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah. Hello, Dr. Long and Weston. Good to meet with you. So I was just listening to the conversation. Very fascinating. And obviously, as you said, you know, with generative AI, there's going to be a lot of potential to add new dimensions to the product and services, perhaps even things like voice agents, which we are seeing a lot in terms of us deploying to our clients in the provider space. What I would like to know is that being remote, like you described, Dr. Long, in the hospital setting, that you are in a rural area, remote area, what are some of the other challenges other than medication adherence and cardiology, cardiac patients you mentioned also in particular? What are some of the other challenges that you're seeing at your health system? And what are some of the other initiatives that you might have in the pipeline, especially around innovation areas?
Yeah, so thank you for asking that question, because again, I feel that rural healthcare is underrepresented, I guess, in studies and conversation and policy making. And I suspect that a majority of the country looks a lot like Magnolia Regional Health Center in our area. And so this is a reality. And when we innovate, when we design systems and try to improve, you know, quality and safety, it's very, very important that work as perceived match well with work as done, you know, those frontline realities that we reference. You know, what comes to mind when you're asking your question is really a lot about the consistent with some of the national focus that we've seen over the past few years. And I think about the lack of interoperability. And I think that this will echo, you know, our earlier point of really overcoming care silos. But I can unpack that a little bit more, and beyond just the obvious silo of hospital and not hospital. But when you think about the face and state of primary care in the country, we know that it's necessary. We know that it has eroded somewhat due to, you know, lack of providers, challenges with doing it well. People are being asked to do more and more with less and less. We're getting a sicker, more complex population. And it's really changed the face of the system. But to address some of that lack of interoperability, you know, by way of example, a very real everyday situation for us is, you know, we'll have a patient that is seen in the hospital. We've got this capable and robust electronic system that does very well with communicating within our system, but not so much with the independent primary care office that might be in Northeast Mississippi. It might be in Northwest Alabama. It might be in Southern Tennessee. We can send our prescriptions to an independent pharmacy, and they do well with receiving those prescriptions. But medication dose changes or discontinuation of medications, when we have multiple streams flowing into the same pharmacy, or even occasionally multiple pharmacies, that represents a real hazard for the patient. And so, to finish my earlier thought, you know, it's really important that we're thoughtful with these implementations, and we want them to be accessible and very usable for both providers and patients. But automation will only get you so far. At some point, you know, good care, I think, and improvement, especially with population management like heart failure, it's hand-to-hand combat, and you're going to have to spend time in actually engaging with that patient. And that's why being proactive and figuring out how do we do that outside of the brick and mortar, outside of the moments where we're perhaps clinically declining. And that's when you reach that patient and improve their outcomes. And so the ways that we have done that is we've tried to combine some, you know, digital solutions with things like well-tried and true efforts like nursing-led, you know, care navigation, where we just try to figure out, hey, what works? How can we easily reach patients? And then what do we do when we reach them? And a lot of that looks like, can we go through your medicine cabinet together? I can't do that with the patient while they're in the hospital. They can't do that in the emergency room. The pharmacy can tell you that the patient, that they filled a prescription, but we really have no idea if the patient's taking that or not unless we get our hands on the medications. And I can't tell you how often we get so much closer by looking at some of Wes's technology and Dr. First's technology with, you know, we need to triangulate with insurance claims data, with medications, with what the pharmacy filled and when did the patient pick it up, and with the electronic prescription. So that gives a more complete picture, but it's not totally complete until you connect the dots with the patient and what they're taking. And that gives you the opportunity to educate, to pick up on adverse events, side effects, any type of unintended consequence, to care. So that is really where this has led, is can we do that in a way that can be replicated? That's always what we're thinking about when we're exploring innovations. But I really do believe that if we can do it in an under-resourced place like Northeast rural Mississippi, with an older population that has largely been characterized as, these patients are unlikely to engage with digital tools. Well, we like to think that we can prove that wrong, but if we can do it here, I certainly believe that it could be done anywhere.
And Ben, I had a couple things to add there too, because to your interoperability challenge, the best part about both Dr. First and Magnolia collaborating together is, one side of the fence on the healthcare technology side, we have all of the data points to follow those prescriptions from the writing of the prescription event all the way to the fill event. But what really matters is, how is that affecting the patient outcomes at the end of the day? And as Ben mentioned, for a rural system, they have one of the most impressive informatics teams that I've seen in my entire healthcare career. And so just because you're in a rural setting doesn't mean you don't have the ability to connect the dots on all of these important outcomes, and you can tie that to technological interventions.
That's great to know. Thank you.
That leads directly into my next question, Wes, because, you know, healthcare technology often optimizes for workflow efficiencies, but not always for trust. So tell us what trust first design looks like in, you know, clinical workflows and patient facing tools, and what's been your focus there?
Yeah, it starts with a very simple concept that many healthcare providers measure their day in clicks, because with the way that electronic health records were designed, there are so many clicks and keystrokes that happen, and the cognitive load as well as the administrative burden becomes unsustainable at some point. And connecting the dots all the way to the patient too, because we have our smartphone in our pocket pretty much whenever we're not sleeping, we're always with text messages, with emails, with all sorts of app-based pings that come to us as patients, because at the end of the day, we're all patients too. So the simple form is to intentionally make every step of the process easier. And specifically in our intervention that Dr. Long and I recently published on, we wanted to test how SMS nudges with education, with fill reminders, with cost information for the patient, how would that type of intervention actually improve medication adherence and reduce readmission rates? And fortunately, in both of those scenarios, we achieved pretty impressive results. And over a 5-year study timeframe, 2.5 years pre and 2.5 years post of the intervention, we got a lot of very positive learnings from relatively simple concepts. Now, the back end technology certainly is not simple, but the ideas that we're testing are. And so sometimes it doesn't take incredibly sophisticated intervention to get really positive outcomes. So starting simple and intentional with the provider and patient workflows, but also rigorously testing those and adjusting them. And then the last step, which most healthcare tech companies do not do, where we pride ourselves on with partners like Magnolia, is the clinical validation at the end. That's the most important part, because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that the interventions that you're putting into place are actually making a difference. And with Ben and his team having such a sophisticated reporting engine specifically on this congestive heart failure population, we were able to demonstrate that.
Great. So time's flown by and we are almost at the end of the podcast. So any closing thoughts, anything you would like to share with the listeners, any forward-looking statements or, you know, your crystal ball that you're looking at? What do you see coming down the pipe?
I think I'll say what has been said before, you know, Wes, as we've talked about this study and just, you know, our work together. And I think as, you know, as healthcare leaders, we're uniquely positioned to identify gaps, you know, that sit between, you know, departments, between, you know, discharge and pharmacy, between prescribing and filling, basically gaps that exist between our intentions to care for people and then the action or what actually happens. Digital tools, I don't think, are the solution by themselves. But mm-hmm. you know, when aligned with clinical insight and operational execution, they become, you know, force multipliers. And our goal moving forward, not just to, you know, send more text messages, but it's to build systems that ensure patients actually receive the care that we prescribe. And I think it's the kind of, you know, leadership and innovation that our healthcare system needs. And I think that's what the Big Unlock podcast advocates for. I think that you shine a spotlight on a lot of the successes that are happening around the country. We are often inundated with the negative, you know, what do we get wrong? But it's kind of like the safety one versus safety two literature. You know, we get it right a lot, and really focusing on and celebrating those wins that we get right is valuable, and it can help us learn as a system. And so I hope to continue doing that throughout my career.
Thank you. Wes, yeah. All yours.
Yeah, it's a great point, because internally, to kind of summarize Ben's point, which I completely agree with, we call it the tech plus touch approach. You're not going to have a technological solution for everything, but you need to be able to empower both clinicians and patients to make their lives easier so they can do the right thing and then celebrate these big wins. And the clinical validation at the end of that step is the key step that we've been focusing on for a very long time. But as new innovations come to the forefront, we want to make sure that we are intentional about those types of interventions. But also being able to connect the dots from the interoperability standpoint to how providers are actually using a lot of these interventions too. So our chief medical officer, Dr. Colin Banas, has a great saying that I always take with me. He's like, you can't manage what you can't measure. So we want to make sure we know what we're measuring well ahead of what we're actually embarking on for these interventions and adding in that human component, because a lot of tech companies focus on the tech, which we do as well, but we also need to make sure that the people that are using the tech are using it properly, efficiently, and it's actually driving to those measurable outcomes that we can get to the point where we can celebrate those wins and then iterate from there.
Great. Tech plus touch. I love that. Thank you so much for being on our podcast today. It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Long. Thank you, Weston.
Yeah. Thank you all so much. We appreciate it.